Hello, everyone. I'm Christine Sandy, and I'm the Program Director of the Rural Health Information Hub. I'd like to welcome you to today's webinar, Improving the Health and Well-Being of Rural Communities Through Collaboration. We have a few housekeeping items to cover before we get started. We do hope to have time at the end of the webinar for your questions. If you do have questions for the presenters, please submit those towards the end of the webinar using the Q&A section that will appear on the lower right-hand corner of the screen, and that will happen at the end of the presentations. We have provided a PDF copy of the presentation in the webinar section of the RHI Hub website, and that's accessible through the URL that's showing on your screen right now. If you do have technical issues during today's webinar, we ask that you call WebEx support at 866-229-3239. And now it is my pleasure to introduce our great speakers for today's webinar. First, we will hear from Alana Knutson and Grace Gonzalez from the NORC Walsh Center for Rural Health Analysis about the new product from the Federal Office of Rural Health Policy, a guide for rural healthcare collaboration and coordination. Alana Knutson, PhD, serves as the Program Area Director in the Public Health Department at NORC at the University of Chicago and is the co-director for NORC's Walsh Center for Rural Health Analysis. Dr. Knutson has over 25 years of experience implementing and directing public health programs, leading health services and health policy research projects, and evaluating program effectiveness. Her research and policy project findings have informed state, tribal, and federal health policy. She also has state and national public health experience, having worked at the North Dakota Department of Health and for the Association of State and Territorial Health Officials. Dr. Knutson serves on the Board of Trustees for the National Rural Health Resource Center and the National Rural Health Association, and the Board of Directors for the Maryland Rural Health Association and the Rural Health Foundation. She's also a member of the RUPRI Rural Health Panel. Grace Gonzalez, MPH, is a public health researcher with 14 years of experience in health and human services systems research and evaluation to support Department of Health and Human Services funded programs and initiatives focused on health and social services, social service systems transformation. Currently at NORC, she primarily works on projects focused on evaluation and evaluation technical assistance to support effective delivery and implementation of enabling social and healthcare services for vulnerable populations. Previous to her current role, she supported the National Association of Community Health Centers' design and delivery of training and technical assistance focused on clinical quality improvement. She previously supported public communications and educational campaigns for the National Institute of Mental Health's Office of Science, Policy, Planning, and Communications. We will then hear from Amanda Arnold and Suzanne Smith from the Healthcare Collaborative of Rural Missouri. Amanda Arnold is the Director of Quality and Risk Management for the Healthcare Collaborative of Rural Missouri. Amanda is in charge of HCC's care coordination efforts and its patient-centered medical home initiative. She works heavily on the network side, helping to bridge the gap between the network and the clinic, as well as helping to promote available services in the community. Amanda has been a registered nurse for 8 years and loves being a part of an organization that helps to address all aspects of a person's care. Suzanne Smith is the Director of Network Development for the Healthcare Collaborative of Rural Missouri. Over the past 5 years, she has worked to develop the HCC network and has engaged more than 60 organizations to cooperate and collaborate in the HCC Rural Network. She has a strong leadership development background, having spent 18 years with the YMCA in Saline County as the CEO. Suzanne currently oversees the network, including the Community Health Worker Program. She has expanded the network's programs to include 12 Project Connect events that have taken place, has put together a resource guide for each county that is served, has started a warehouse to address the social determinants of health needs of patients and network clients, and is in charge of the HealthTran transportation initiative. Suzanne is also on the CHW Hub Echo team through the Missouri Telehealth Network and serves on the CHW Advisory Committee and is a board member for the newly formed CHW Association for the State of Missouri. And our final speaker will be Christy Obenauer. Christy was born and raised in Hazen, North Dakota. She lived in many other places in her career as a banker before moving back to Hazen in 2002. Christy is the CEO and president of Union State Bank and is the board chair for Sakakawea Medical Center in Hazen. She began serving on the board in 2003 and thus has had the privilege of being deeply involved in the evolution of the collaboration between their critical access hospital and the federally qualified health center, Coal Country Community Health Center, in their community. And with that, I will turn it over to Alana.
Great, thank you. Thank you so much for joining us this afternoon. I would like to first acknowledge our funder, the Federal Office of Rural Health Policy, for making this project possible. And I would also like to thank the many rural subject matter experts from across the country that we talked to and who so generously shared their expertise with us that helped inform this guide. Lastly, I would like to thank my NORC Wolf Center colleagues and also our colleagues at HMS Associates. This guide was recently released. In fact, it was released just this week. This guide was developed to provide information to rural community leaders, all stakeholders from cross-cutting areas in rural communities and rural healthcare provider organizations. As I mentioned, this guide was informed by local, state, and national rural health provider organizations, and the link to this guide is provided on this slide. The Guide to Healthcare Collaboration and Coordination was developed to address a number of important issues. First and foremost, we know that rural providers today are facing some very unique challenges. There are some issues with limited economies of scale, dependence on Medicare and Medicaid, and in some instances, some very low volumes. We also are faced with having workforce shortages in some of our rural communities and looking at how to maintain financial viability. We also know that lack of collaboration can put some of these key services at risk, given the fragile economies of some of our rural communities. We know it is far better to collaborate than to compete. There's also been a shift from volume to value with regard to payment and reimbursement. Case in point are accountable care organizations. We know that when we're looking at delivering services, we are looking much more at the holistic needs of our patient population to help maintain their health and make sure they have the essential services they need to remain healthy and viable in their communities. And lastly, there's a growing interest in looking at how patient-centered approaches to care also address important social determinants of health, such as transportation, housing, and access to food. The guide has been created to address some different key features that you may find helpful as you and your partners are looking at different types of collaboration and care coordination efforts. This guide has first a section on elements of rural collaboration and coordination that my colleague Grace will share in more detail. And these really provide some building blocks that will help new collaborations or perhaps strengthen existing collaborations. We also feature two very innovative case studies from Missouri and North Dakota, and both of those case studies will be presented by the implementers of those efforts. And lastly, we include tools and resources. In this section, there are links and examples of different tools and resources that may help your organization as you look to expand your collaboration and care coordination efforts. We specifically developed this work using two distinct definitions. The collaboration definition is defined as activities in which providers work together through various vehicles, formalized through contracts, memorandums of understanding, and data use agreements to maximize resources and efficiencies with a common goal of ensuring access and provision of services for rural populations. And when we look at coordination, we are looking at the deliberate organization and communication about patient care activities between two or more participants involving patients' care to facilitate the appropriate delivery of quality health care and social services. Again, we're looking at addressing the whole needs of the person. And lastly, we provide information about the different rural health safety net providers. And in this guide, we reference rural health clinics, health centers, also known as FQHCs, and the different types of rural hospitals, including critical access hospitals, sole community hospitals, Medicare-dependent hospitals, and Medicare and Medicaid disproportionate share hospitals. And with that, I will turn it over to Grace to share more details about the sections that are included in the elements.
Thank you, Alana. I'm going to now go over the elements. In the guide, collaboration and coordination is presented as a tool or strategy to efficiently and effectively address patient population needs. As you all know, there's growing recognition in the current landscape that addressing complex patient needs often requires multiple supports from multiple systems of care, which plays in favor with strongly considering collaboration coordination as a strategy. The slide that you're now viewing briefly summarizes four elements. These elements are presented for leaders of rural health organizations to help you or to help inform new and enhance existing collaboration coordination. These elements were informed by examining success factors and lessons learned from current rural collaboration coordination efforts across the country. The guide includes, as Alana shared, relevant tools and resources. There are relevant tools and resources associated with each one of these elements in the guide, and further these elements are further illustrated by the case studies in the guide. These elements build upon one another, and ideally rural health provider organizations would address each element in sequence. However, organizations should tailor how they focus on each of these elements based on what their community context is and what their needs are. So now I'm going to go through each element. Element one is analyze the environment. This element discusses how to lay the foundation for successful collaboration and coordination. Laying that foundation involves developing a deepened understanding of your patient population's needs through use of existing data sources and review of these needs with an eye of potential partnering with others in your community. It also involves developing a deep understanding of the provider organizations in your community to help identify shared priorities. This element suggests use of pre-existing data sources that are easily accessible to understand your patient population's needs. And these are data sources that you probably are already using, such as EHR data and community health surveillance data. Other sources highlighted are community health needs assessments, not just your own, but review of other provider organizations' needs assessments. These needs assessments are often found under the public domain. The guide highlights which organizations are required to complete these needs assessments and how often. With regard to developing a deeper understanding of provider organizations in your community, the guide references data sources such as review of organizational strategic plans, programmatic and regulatory requirements about the organizations that you might partner with and for the organizations you already have an existing relationship with. These materials can offer insight on what drives the culture and governance of these organizations, which is key to understand. Review of these data sources that I just touched upon collectively can help you prioritize and identify cross-cutting needs where it might make sense to partner, and it can also help inform who to consider partnering with. The guide features a tool to help identify potential partner organizations to consider partnering with. This element also highlights the importance of being aware of national, state, and local trends that could potentially affect your collaboration and coordination efforts. In the guide, national trends such as value-based healthcare models are highlighted. The next element is element two, engagement with potential partners. For this element, approaches to engaging existing partners or new partners are discussed. One of the approaches highlighted is the community health needs assessment process. This is a great opportunity to explore new partnerships and strengthen existing ones. As you prepare to engage in collaboration coordination efforts, consider participating in leading these efforts using a community-minded approach. Based on examination of successful rural collaboration coordination efforts, a common theme and thread we found among leadership was that these leaders lead with a community-minded approach. You're probably wondering, what is a community-minded approach or leader? A community-minded leader addresses community needs in the most appropriate and effective manner possible, and without unnecessarily duplicating the efforts of other organizations. This leader believes that no single organization in the community can address all the needs of their patient population, and that it's vital to leverage the strengths and capabilities of other communities, organizations, in order to comprehensively address patient population needs. The value of leading in this manner was discussed by rural health organization leaders as helping to strengthen the collaboration coordination process, and also it can help with reducing or eliminating unproductive provider-level competition. Element 3, developing a collective strategy. This element highlights the importance of collective discussions among rural provider organizations and stakeholders to discuss complex patient needs. Multi-stakeholder discussions are often valuable and can lead to effective design of collaboration and coordination strategies. Having these types of discussions are important for relationship building, level setting, getting buy-in, and strengthening the general will to address a common patient population need. As you prepare and plan for these collective discussions, whether it be part of your community health needs assessment process or something else, consider hiring a trained facilitator to help facilitate these discussions. Multi-stakeholder discussions should take place in an environment that encourages diverse exchange of ideas, opinions, and it should be done in a collegial and respectful manner. And a trained facilitator can help with that. A facilitator can serve as that neutral third party to help navigate any sort of historical tensions if they exist or any emerging ones that might present. So another area highlighted in this element are metrics. Identifying a parsimonious set of meaningful measures can help with guiding improvement and performance of your collaboration coordination efforts. Use of performance measures can demonstrate value of your collaboration and coordination, which can help with garnering sustainability support from others in the community. The final element, element 4, review requirements and seek technical assistance. This element highlights the importance of completing your due diligence before committing to a collaboration coordination strategy. All organizations involved in a collaboration coordination strategy must first ensure that the strategy complies with their programmatic and regulatory requirements. During this due diligence process, it's recommended that organizations research and access relevant technical assistance resources specific to the selected strategy being contemplated before actually engaging. And this can help determine how it may affect, you know, how the strategy may affect compliance and what additional measures need to be taken to ensure that compliance. The guide highlights various technical resources to this end. A consistent message we learned from rural health leaders involved in collaboration and coordination efforts we examined is not every collaboration coordination strategy implemented will be successful every time, but each journey is worth it because you learn from these experiences and it builds an organization's capacity for future partnerships. I'm going to turn things over to the next presenter.
Hi, my name is Amanda Arnold. So this first slide, this case study, the focus of the case study was implementing a rural health network to address healthcare access and social determinants of health needs. So during 2003, the Care Connection for Aging Services, which was a nonprofit area agency on aging, served at 13 West Central Missouri counties, and they began planning for a senior center. During this time, while this was taking place, the Lafayette County Health Department worked together to inform or to make an informal coalition to look at some community needs that could be addressed by the senior center that they were working on. Some of the people that were identified were individuals in economic development, public health, healthcare, behavioral health, social service agencies, and some local school districts. The members quickly realized, though, that the needs identified, such as provider shortages, oral health, transportation, disease prevention, and health needs across the lifespan, exceeded what a senior center could address. So on this slide, the individuals that were identified, they were informal members, began serving one county, which was the Lafayette County in the blue, with one part-time employee, and they were attempting to address all of the identified needs at that time. We can definitely tell you that there were many failures during this time, such as where the patients would be served, who owned the patient, HIPAA compliance, and the continuity of care, where the records were stored, the referral process. We didn't have access to specialists when we were doing the referrals, money, who was going to pay for it when a patient didn't have the money. And who, you know, there at that time were no grant funds around it to cover that. But truly, it was the unknown. We didn't know what we didn't know, and we were working really hard to establish that. But it took a lot of people sitting together at the table and truly working through these things that we didn't know what would happen next. So since this time, the network has since formalized itself into a not-for-profit, which serves all four of those rural counties in blue, as well as the rural portion of the other county, which is the Eastern Jackson County that it points to right there. HCC now has approximately 60 network partner organizations, approximately 80 staff members, 4 FQHCs, 2 school-based clinics, a mobile dental unit, a transportation initiative, a discount drug program, and a warehouse that helps the network to address social determinants of health. One thing that the network has always focused on is working to understand and address its patients' needs, and by assessing the community's interest in working together to address those needs. So after the coalition agreed to incorporate, it continued to pursue funding that required collaborative efforts to meet those local needs. There were 2 grants specifically. They were both HRSA grants that were really instrumental in the early development. One of those was the Rural Network Development Planning Program, and the second was the Rural Health Network Development Grant. The purpose of the planning grant was to assist in the development of an integrated healthcare network, specifically for entities that did not have a history of formal collaboration. And the Rural Health Network Development Grant supported established health-oriented networks with a history of collaboration to develop and maintain collaborative relationships. So as you can see with the progression, that the relationships came first. It was always about that initially. Without the right people at the table, the networks are really difficult to sustain. HCC's board knew that it was more important to look at the long-term outcomes as opposed to grant and program-driven sustainability. We wanted to ensure that we would survive and outlast any single grant proposal. So this slide really reflects the drivers of the organization, the nucleus obviously being the most important piece. It is focusing on the strong development of a community-based organization. The health centers are the economic engine of the organization, and the outermost ring focuses on all of the external relationships within the communities that trust us to provide that good patient-centered care for their clients, families, and friends. These external relationships continue to be a very important part of how the network functions today. Not only do we care for these referrals within our FQHCs and on our mobile dental unit and in our school-based clinics, but we oftentimes go to the other organizations for problem solving around things such as resource development for the lower income individuals. We can honestly say that without these partnerships, our patients wouldn't have as easy access to that care and access to that holistic patient-centered care. And then this slide, this tool is really used to help us validate our strategic plan as well as the success of our organization. This slide is often used when forming new relationships and cultivating existing relationships within the community. Rural communities are always strapped for resources, so to be able to show an economic footprint around things such as financial growth and job creation and sustainability, as well as show that, you know, we're a strong service provider. It's critical in finding ways that communities can invest in what we're doing, and it shows the ability for people to get behind us and in our mission and vision and values, and truly providing that good, holistic, patient-centered care.
Okay, this is Suzanne Smith, and I'm the Director of Network Development for the Healthcare Collaborative. And so through our collaborative, we address the social determinants of health of all of our patients and then all of our clients that are members of our network. So we try and address any barriers to care that are identified through the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention's Behavioral Risk Factor Surveillance System. So our Rural Health Network, which has grown, it is over 60 members now, and our community-based partners. Our member organizations include critical access hospitals, clinics, faith-based organizations, social service organizations, food pantries, and anyone that serves folks in our communities that want to come to the table to talk about how we can wrap our arms around the patients and clients of our communities to provide that whole person care. We also collaborate very closely with the Missouri Valley Community Action Agency, which has action agencies and offices in all of the different counties that we serve. So how do we do how do we exactly utilize these resources, and then how do we assess the determinants of health of our patients and clients? We utilize the PREPARE form, which is a protocol for responding to and assessing patients' assets, risks, and experiences. So every patient that comes into one of our federally qualified health centers fills out a PREPARE form. And if they are a patient that is seen in one of our school-based clinics, if they're 12 and over, they fill out a PREPARE form. With what that PREPARE form does is it allows us to see if they are at risk of needing resources. Maybe they're at risk of being homeless, or they don't have food in their home, or their utilities have been shut off, or they're coming in with chronic bronchitis every month because they're sleeping on the floor with no mattress because they can't afford one. So when we get those PREPARE forms, we have community health workers that are in all of our clinics, and then we also have four community health workers that work on our network side. And then there are two community health workers, one in each school-based clinic that we have. When they receive those PREPARE forms and identify that there are patients that need resources, then they reach out and work with those patients directly to give them a hand up, not a hand out, to access the resources that they need. We started a warehouse in 2016, which is a 7,500 square foot warehouse located directly across the parking lot from our administrative office, where we are able to glean items and resources that would otherwise go in the landfill, such as laundry detergent, personal hygiene items, body wash, shampoo, sheets, blankets, mattresses, anything that folks cannot buy with food stamps, but as we all know, costs a great deal of money. We work with the 60 different organizations that are a part of our network to get those resources back out to the people that are in need in the communities. Everything that comes in is free, and everything that goes out is free. We also do a PREPARE form on any of the clients that are clients of our organizational network that come in that need resources as well. We say we don't serve individuals, but we serve the organizations because we want to build the capacity within our communities. We also have what's called our Connectors Program, which we have over 100 people in our community that are trained on how to connect folks in their community to resources that are needed, whether it be through their church organization or through their workplace. they learn how to find the resources that someone might need if they got a shutoff notice for their utilities, or again, if they found out that someone just moved in and has no food in their home. We also host 3 Project Connect events per year, and those events are a one-day public health event that are geared towards adults that are underserved and uninsured. We target those folks by offering services that are free. We have around 50 different social service organizations that come in and provide services, including haircuts. We have high schoolers that come in that will paint fingernails for folks. We offer vouchers for free for folks to be able to get a photo ID or to renew their driver's license or to be able to obtain a birth or death certificate in the state of Missouri. We also take our mobile dental unit, and we do free dental extractions for adults as well. What we also do is we have a person from the community that is a volunteer that guides our guests that come in that day for services throughout their experience. So not only is that guest that needs those resources learning what is available in their community, also, the guide, who is the volunteer, is learning what resources are also there in case they know other folks that might need these resources. At the end of the event, there's a short exit survey that is filled out, and then the guests get to receive an exit bag that has about $15 worth of personal hygiene items in it, such as body wash, shampoo, toilet paper, toothbrush, and then they get to select other items that we have there to give out, such as OxiClean, blankets, coats, whatever the time of the year is, we try and gear our additional resources towards that. So the outcomes that we have experienced. In August of 2017, our Rural Health Network had donated over $1 million worth of goods and services to its patients and clients in our community through the warehouse. So that means everything that comes in is tracked and everything that goes out is tracked so that we can put a dollar amount on it. Our Connectors program, in 2014, we had 60 local residents that were assisted with 130 patient encounters. In 2017, we had 550 local residents assisted with over 3,900 patient encounters. Since those, since that Connectors program, we have really increased our community health workers, so our patient encounters are growing significantly as we speak. Our Project Connect event, we have an average of 125 people that present for each event, and approximately 300 people receive services. That includes the adults registered and their families that come along with them for the day. So advice and lessons learned from our collaboration and coordination. Never leave anyone behind. Always include anyone in your community that wants to help, whether they be from a large organization or a small organization. If they have the passion to help people, then be sure that you give them that opportunity to come to your table and be able to do the great work that is needed in all of our communities. I will turn this over to our next presenter.
This is Christy Obenauer. That was such a great story to hear, both Suzanne and Amanda. Thank you. It's inspiring to hear what others are doing across our country. You're doing great work. My perspective is going to be a little bit different in that, as you could tell from my bio, my paid job is a banker. My volunteer job is the Sakakawea Medical Center board chair. And so my perspective on the collaboration journey that we have been traversing is a little bit higher level and certainly from the perspective of governance. So I hope I can share something that is worthy of you listeners out there. So, and I'm speaking at you because our hospital and community health center CEO is unavailable at the moment, so you get to tolerate me. So, as I said, I'm the board chair for Sakakawea Medical Center, which is a critical access hospital 501c3 organization we've had in our community since 1941. We are we're licensed for 13 beds and also have a basic care facility, 34-bed basic care facility that is attached to the hospital as well. I'll also be talking about Coal Country Community Health Center, which is an FQHC, our story is just about how we managed to get on the same page and formally collaborate. And the Coal Country Community Health Center has been in existence since 2003. Our community is in western North Dakota. We serve collectively about three counties that the service area equates to a population of about 13,000 people. So we are quite rural. Our sector of our economy is, as you can expect, ag-based. And then we have quite a bit of energy production here in western North Dakota as well. So that's the community that we serve. The backstory behind our collaboration is that the Secaucus Medical Center had an adversarial relationship with Coal Country, with our FQHC. When Coal Country came into existence, there was just a lot of miscommunication or simple lack of communication. We had great people. Have great people that serve on both of those boards, Coal Country's and Secaucus Medical Center's boards, and certainly great staff at all organizations, but we just were not in a position to be communicating. There was some lack of trust on the leadership for both organizations, and so it just created a lot of antagonism and unfortunately ultimately created an environment where we were competing with one another with services and taking care of the same small rural space of population, and it just made absolutely no sense. So I often say to my board, without trying to wax poetic, that we would never want to go back to the way it was before we started this formal collaboration. However, we wouldn't appreciate where we are today without having been where we were. And I think the quote on the slide that you're looking at kind of speaks to that, just that we're one team serving the community, and that's as it should be in any rural space. I've often said, just to connect the dots to the statement I've just made, that in a rural marketplace like ours, we are doing a disservice to our community if we're not pooling our resources and putting more than one brain on the table and collaborating. We can do so much more together than we can trying to go it alone. And that's certainly been our experience doing what we're doing today for our community. So the map that you're looking at is just a representation of the area that we serve. SMC, the Critical Access Hospital, serves that entire area, and as I mentioned, is a little bit over 13,000 people. Coal Country, which is our FQHC, has four clinic locations. Beulah and Hazen are kind of in the center, our largest community, and in the center of Mercer County. Where our energy sectors are centered, from coal and oil, and lots of high per capita income area for us in North Dakota. Coal Country also has a clinic in the center, which is also in the backyard of Coal Country and is a smaller community than Beulah and Hazen is. And then they also have a clinic in Kildare, which is Dunn County, and that's a little bit closer to the oil patch. So we have a variety of areas that we serve that represent some economic diversity. All of those areas of course, also are quite ag-based. So the services that SMC provide, and still today, obviously we're a hospital, and I mentioned we have a basic care facility. We also have ancillary services endo lab, we have hospice, we have physical therapy. And before we were collaborating, Coal Country was duplicating some of that. We, at one point, both organizations had a CT, which makes absolutely no sense for a small community our collective size. And we're duplicating some other things, so we're competing for the same small band of population. Over the period of time that we began to get together, the Coal Country Community Health Center opened a clinic in Hazen, and FMC closed our community or our rural health based rural health clinic in Hazen and Beulah in order to allow for that to take place, and that really just made a lot of sense for our communities. In terms of how the collaboration took place or how we got started together, we basically, there was a change of leadership at Coal Country that afforded the opportunity for the boards to have a conversation led by our CEO, Daryl Birch, and the medical director at Coal Country. And we basically just said, we've got to figure out how to do this together. And ultimately, we ended up getting HRSA involved to help with the process of getting on the same page together. And I'll talk a little bit about that more in a moment. And that began the journey of a more formalized relationship. I'm going to flip the slide here. This three-legged stool is a reference that we use quite a bit when we are afforded the opportunity to talk about this road that we have traversed. We look at three legs, as you can see in the slide. The functional end of the stool is just basically about the fact that we sat down and figured out, okay, how can we start to do this more formally, create a short-term arrangement between the hospital and the health center. And as I mentioned, we worked with HRSA's Bureau of Primary Health Care in that initial collaboration to get something set up that they would approve and that worked for us and for the community that we served. So the functional piece, of course, involved sharing a CEO. So the hospital and the health center, we share a CEO between the two of us, and we have a formalized agreement that represents that sharing. And then we also have formalized agreements for sharing other services, from physical therapy to lab to ancillary services like CT and all of those kind of pieces. The contractual leg was, we have that in place just to make sure that what we're doing is aligned with the regulations and the standards that are in place both to regulate critical access hospitals and also SQHDs. And that is certainly where we engaged legal counsel and help from HRSA to make sure that as we blazed this new trail of formalizing a relationship between a critical access hospital and an SQHD, that we were getting it right and following the rules and regulations that were in place to govern those two types of entities. And it also, even though, as I mentioned earlier, we never want to slip backwards, but we also are trying to be conscientious of the fact that we are two separate organizations, two separate entities with two separate boards, that if we needed to unravel that relationship, we could do so in a way that was outlined in a contract. And so that's part of that second contractual leg. The third leg about the structural perspective was primarily about creating a model for integrated governance that afforded complete transparency and just an alignment of our strategic planning. So as I mentioned, we share this CEO that's employed by Coal Country, and we have the shared service agreement that FMC has back from Coal Country for Daryl. And two of our hospital board members serve on the Coal Country Board, and two of the Coal Country Board members serve on the hospital board. And of course, our CEO attends both of those board meetings too. And we do all of our strategic planning and any of those high-level conversations, we do those things together. And that really works well for us. The outcomes, and again, I am not well positioned to provide minutia because I'm not employed in the healthcare industry, but just from a governance perspective, and certainly as a community member, the thing that I get approached about the most here over the last number of years that we've been doing this is just about the fact that we're efficient and we are representative of what the community needs. So we're no longer duplicating services. As I mentioned, there was both an RHD and a community health center in both the communities of Hazen and Beulah. That made no sense, so we're not doing that anymore. We don't duplicate ancillary services, so we don't duplicate CT, stress testing, bone density, ultrasound, those kinds of things. And as you can see from the table that Gerald prepared for this slide, from an economic standpoint, it's made a huge difference in the financial success of both organizations. And with financial success, we are simply afforded the opportunity to do more for our community, which is our explicit purpose. So it's a great position to be in, and we know that we're making a difference when things are going well. The other point I wanted to make, in addition to the things that are listed, we have a community health improvement plan, we have a population health committee, we are a member of an ACO, and Coal Country does a really great job of facilitating our patient-centered medical neighborhood program for all of our organizations. But I've been the most heavily involved with our community health needs assessment. We conduct that needs assessment for our greater community, the whole area that was on the map a couple of slides ago, every 3 years. And we just finished our latest one this past spring of this year. We survey our community and our healthcare professionals from our whole service area. And then we also conduct individual interviews with a variety of community leaders. And then we ultimately meet together face-to-face and spend about a half a day just going through all of the things that we've identified that our community needs. And that's, from my perspective, really about listening to our community, listening to our neighbors, paying attention and staying engaged. And then we have an opportunity to share our thoughts collectively when we have this meeting about what things are the most important that we're hearing our community say that they need. And some great results we've had from that, tangible results, are like this past spring. Mental health was at the top of the list of needs that we are going to be focused on and have been focused on, but with a little bit more laser-like intent. Drug and alcohol addiction is at the top of the list. And in the community health needs assessment that we conducted the last time, daycare, interestingly enough, was at the top of the list. And we just simply are in an environment where everyone's working. We don't have enough people to fill jobs, and we don't have enough people who are interested in doing daycare to take care of the kids that those working parents have. And so, short story is, from that community health needs assessment, where all of the people in our community, all from public health to the community health center to the long-term care facility in our area to the hospital, to our Mercer County ambulance, and all of the people that represent organizations that take care of our community, were at the table and said, we got to figure out how to handle this daycare thing. And we put together a new daycare facility for our community, and that has gone really well. So back to the last slide that I have here, just in terms of lesson learned. I mentioned it earlier, but I often say, be a good listener, stay engaged, step back and look at the greater good and the big picture, and As I often say in our boardroom, if we make decisions through the lens of what's in the best interest of the community we serve, we'll make the right decision every time. And sometimes we have to blaze new trails for the greater good, which is what we did here, and be willing to push the envelope, again, to get the right thing done for our community. So thank you for the opportunity to share our story with you. I will hand it back to Elena, I think.
All right. This is Christine, and at this point, we will open up the webinar for questions. Down in the right-hand corner, we have opened up the Q&A section. So go ahead and type your questions in there for our presenters. We have a few minutes for questions. And we do ask that when you enter those questions, that you select the option to send the question to all the panelists so that we don't miss your question. And we do have one question that already came in, and this is for Amanda and Suzanne. The question is, do the various network partners have a common electronic record, and is the prepare form part of that EMR?
So this is Suzanne. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, so there is no common electronic medical record across the board for us, so we're not able to share that. But the prepare form does go directly into our electronic medical record so that our providers can see that, and we use eClinicalWorks.
Great, thank you. Another question for you. Wondering if you could describe some of the challenges that you face bringing organizations into the network?
To be honest with you, we really don't face many challenges at all. If anything, it is getting their MOUs collected back in a good time is probably the biggest challenge that we have, but they tell other organizations that they work with about us, and then they want to be a part of us. So the recruitment is pretty easy. It's basically word of mouth.
And I can tell you that on the from a patient perspective, I think that as long as all of us continue to focus on our specific patient population and our the specialists that we have in place, the wires don't get crossed near as easily. And so what I'm meaning by that is, you know, the hospital has a specific set of things that they can do, and our mental health, our CCBHC or our community mental health center, they have a specific set of things that they can perform, and the FQHC as well. And so by us all knowing our own roles and where we can refer to each other, it helps our patients get the best care, and it helps us all be able to meet our metrics and keep our patient numbers where they're supposed to be. So, you know, that's been the only thing that has really required additional discussion. But by bringing us all to the table at the same time and discussing those things really mitigates that problem.
All right, thank you. Mm-hmm. Question for Christy. When you brought the two centers together, was there any loss of jobs by the workers in the community? Because this person says that often seems to be the scare that stops those types of mergers.
Sure, that's understandable. There wasn't for us. In fact, we ended up collectively hiring more people, not gobs of people, but we collectively, between both organizations, ended up hiring more people just because we are economically doing well. We can expand some services, so no loss of jobs.
All right. And another question for you, Christy. What level of help was HRSA able to provide in helping create the collaboration between Cole Country and Sakakawea Medical Center?
Another great question. I know we pushed them. When I say we pushed the envelope, we pushed HRSA because nobody had done this before. So we spent some time in Washington, D.C. just telling our story and why we thought it was important for us to be able to create a formalized relationship for collaboration. but they were great listeners, and when they understood what it was we were trying to accomplish and why, because it was for the benefit of our community, they were a big help. And I think just seeing this guide that we're talking about today that has ours and Amanda and Suzanne's examples in there, it's a great representation of versus willingness to say, this can be done and this is how it looks and it can be of benefit to the community.
Great. So for both of you or both organizations, what are preferred and efficient ways of sharing information on an ongoing basis to facilitate that full engagement and collaboration?
I can start answering that and then turn it over to Amanda and Suzanne. I mentioned just communication. I worked hard at the outset of this to make sure everyone was on the same page. So that was conversations in boardrooms. It was taking people out for dinner. It was meeting with them in their office, being a good listener, sharing information, just to make sure everyone felt comfortable with where we were going and why. And today, now with our formal relationship, we are very conscientious about doing our strategic planning together. Coal Country's and SNC's board has meetings together several times throughout the year, and we're going into a board retreat this fall to do some strategic planning. We do those kind of things together, so there's transparency and a unified approach about where we're going.
Hi, this is Suzanne, and we have a monthly network membership meeting. It's a luncheon where we have a different guest speaker that comes in every month that has a topic of interest to the network members, and then everyone that is in attendance has an opportunity to give an update on what is going on in their organization. And then we send those minutes and any flyers that they may have out to all of the network members in the network via email. And so there's about 100 folks that get that update and can share. And then we also have our Social Services Connectors meeting once a month as well that has a different guest speaker that comes in. And again, it's the same format. They all get the minutes sent out to them, but that group focuses on what is an immediate need in our communities that we can work together on to help maybe fulfill the gap.
Great, thank you. It looks like we have a few questions kind of around working with other types of entities, so including Indian Health Service, universities, and public health. So can you comment on the extent to which you have partnered with those types of organizations?
This is Suzanne, and yes, we work with the University of Missouri Extension. They are a part of our network where they come in and will do cooking classes or finance classes, different types of classes like that that will help benefit the clients in our community. And then we work very closely with our public health department, and actually the director of that department is on our board of directors. So we work hand in hand with them.
And this is Amanda. I think it's important too, just to any opportunity that comes your way, it's every new opportunity, we've been able to identify a success out of it. I mean, there have been so many things that haven't succeeded, like I was talking about earlier with those you don't know what you don't know, but it's just important that if anybody comes to you with a solution with a suggestion to work together for how it will impact the patients and how it will impact the community, because there's been some things that we most definitely did not think would work that ended up us working together and found a great solution on a better way to serve or a better way to collaborate on a specific service.
All right. Let's see. Related to Christy's presentation, what struggles do you have in getting did you have in getting patients directed to the most appropriate place? So when both places didn't have a CT anymore, were there struggles with directing people to the right place?
I think what was the most frustrating for us as boards and inside each of the organizations, FMC and Coal Country, and certainly what was the most frustrating for the community is just not knowing where they should go. So when there was that span of time when we each had a CT, I had many people come to my office from the community to say, why is there two? Where am I going to be best served? So it just created confusion. And I simply tried to be a good listener. We all tried to be a good listener then and work our way through those concerns. As we, you know, when we got to the point where we were no longer duplicating, it makes it pretty easy. The community health center's clinic is inside the hospital. We just built a new hospital a year and a half ago, and Coal Country's clinic is inside our hospital. So, you know, we come in and there's care coordination between all the organizations and with the patient center's medical home setup or parameters. Patients know where they're supposed to go because they're being directed by the collective staff between the entities. So it was confusing for our community and our patients before we managed to get on the same page.
All right. And a question related to the HCC Connector program. How did you go about identifying the low-income individuals and families that you would invite to attend?
This is Amanda. We don't turn anybody away. So especially with the Project Connect events, if they come to us and they state that they need services, we will serve them. And I think that it's really important to note that, you know, we don't know what their specific situation is at that on that specific day or that month or whatever. And sometimes people just fall on hard times and it's unexpected. So we want to make sure that that's open to anybody that needs that. As far as low-income individuals in our clinics, you know, there are many mandatory requirements being an FQHC and having to identify things such as the annual income and applying for a slide fee and the hardship forms. And so every patient is asked those questions at every visit, and then the needs are, you know, addressed or assessed based on what has been identified.
All right. And do you struggle with certain partners being unequally committed to the work, and how do you handle that?
I mean, there are some organizations and partners that, you know, bring more to the table than others, but they get more out of it. You know, if they're active, then they get more out of it. If they're inactive, then unfortunately, it's typically the loss to their patients and their organization. But we treat them all the same, and there's not a certain requirement that they have to be able to participate in any of that stuff.
All right. And another question for you. What strategies did you identify that worked well in obtaining the community needs for that needs assessment since your area is so rural?
We utilize the Center for Rural Health in Grand Forks to get that, to help us facilitate that community health needs assessment. So we sent out a survey electronically, and all of us board members and the staff at both organizations just really talked it up with our neighbors, our friends, the people that we work with in our community to say, please take a few minutes to fill it out. And we got really great engagement from that. So using an electronic survey makes it easy and efficient to fill out. And then the Center for Rural Health then just helped us identify community leaders to arrange for one-on-one interviews. And that was just done face-to-face, having conversations. And our community was very willing to be engaged, continues to be very willing to be engaged in that needs assessment because they do see tangible results that come from it.
Great, thank you. Since we're about 5 minutes over time, I think we will wrap it up at this point, and I apologize to those folks that we weren't able to get to your questions. The presenters' email addresses were included in the in the presentation. So if you have questions for them directly, you do have those email addresses. So I would like to take this opportunity to thank our speakers for their great presentations and the insights that they've shared with us today. And thank you to all our participants for joining us. A survey will automatically open at the end of the webinar, and we encourage you to take a few minutes to complete that survey to give us your feedback so that we can do even better with webinars in the future. The slides used in today's webinars are currently available at www.ruralhealthinfo.org/webinars. In addition, a recording and transcript of today's webinar will be made available on the RHI Hub website and sent to you by email in the near future, so you can listen to the webinar again and share the presentation with your colleagues. Thanks so much for joining us, and have a great day.